This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello, good afternoon, or good evening, or it could be good morning for all I know. You could be somewhere in the U.S. or around the world. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, host of Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for joining us. You are somewhere, wherever you're at. It's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to it. And do us a favor, before we start, always, we have over 100 countries who have listened to the show, and we appreciate you sharing the show with everybody. Don't forget, this audio will go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Currently, we're live on Facebook, and thanks for joining us, and we are live on YouTube. Don't forget, go to YouTube, also Peter Caliendo, Facebook Peter Caliendo, and subscribe, because that helps get the show out. And every time you subscribe, guess what happens? You get an update. You get an update on a new show every time we hold them, and we hold a lot of them, so hope that you will join us all the time. And if you have any questions, don't forget, just put them in the comments section of Facebook. Hey, listen, guess where we're going today? We always go somewhere around the world, but, you know, I know we do a lot of shows in the U.S., but we are in Peru. Yes, folks, Peru. And there is baseball in Peru, and it's pretty good baseball. And I got a chance to go there twice, sent a couple good friends of mine. First of all, Perry Husband was there. And also, I believe it was Pete Wilkinson also was in Peru. And I got the pleasure of being in Peru twice, working with the coaches, working with, some players there with the Federation. Unbelievable. Treated us first class all the way. So let me welcome our guys from Peru. And the reason I want to tell you about them, because it's a unique country. First of all, it's a beautiful country, but it's a unique country for baseball. And we want the world to know about these guys because they've done some pretty good things out there. Let me first welcome Vice President of the Peruvian Baseball Federation, also one of the coaches that went to the World Children's Baseball Fair, we had a good time there also. Let me welcome Paul Gonzalez. What's up, Paulie? How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Pete. It's great to be in your show, and I want to say hello to everybody listening around the world.
All right, man. And don't forget, folks, Paul was also a baseball player in Peru, and we're going to talk about that. And then with him, Ernest Arias. I know I probably messed it up. I'm working on my Spanish, but Ernest Arias. Listen, Ernest is from Venezuela, but get this, played baseball in the U.S. Elliot Johnson was his baseball coach, Hall of Fame coach with the ABCA. Olivet Nazarene University right here in Illinois with the national team with Peru. We're going to talk about the national team. And look out, you're going to watch Peru baseball in Inside Pitch, the ABCA magazine. It's coming. You're going to see an interview with these guys, and you're going to learn even more about Peruvian baseball. Hopefully we'll get a lot more out of this show because we got an hour and they don't have an hour on the show. So first, let me welcome Ernest. How you doing, buddy? How's everything going?
Hey, Pete. Doing well. It's an honor to be in your show. And yeah, let's have a good time today.
Yeah, and it's been a while that I had two people. I'm a little rusty. I could feel it. There were two people on the show. I'm always one-on-one. But I think it is going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, let's start with this, guys. Let's do this. First of all, I'm going to forward Facebook. Make sure that you got questions here as we're going along. Type them in the comments section. We'll get your questions in. It'll be a lot of fun if you can do that. Paul, let's start with you. You know, obviously, I came down in 2017, I think it was, 2018, both times. Got the experience working with the coaches. I really enjoyed it. I think it was a fantastic trip for me. Got to see, what Peruvian baseball is all about. But let's talk a little bit about the history of Peruvian baseball. Tell me a little bit about it. Tell the folks about it, kind of how the sport developed there and where it's at right now. And we'll get into some questions there.
Okay, well, maybe people don't know this, but baseball in Peru started in probably early 20th century. And wow. And the Baseball Federation was founded in 1926. And so we've been around for a while. And at the beginning, Americans came to the port of Callao, which is in near Lima. Mm-hmm. And they got in contact with the people here and commercial relationships, etc. But they also started sharing their passion for baseball with the people here, and that's how we started playing baseball here in Peru. And later on, also the Japanese community here had their baseball going on, and then there were interesting matches between the Callao people and the Jesus Maria people, which is one of the neighborhoods here that is very well known for baseball, and then Pueblo Libre. So the different districts of Lima started very interesting matchups, and it was really, really great baseball in the, especially in the 1960s, it was very big. But then eventually, you know, soccer is the big sport here in Peru. And well, the different teams that were formed at the time didn't actually, I don't know. Well, actually, there was a lot of competition at that time. But later on, you know, with during the 80s, baseball was not as big as soccer, and then the 90s, you know, but we're starting to make it grow as time goes by. But it's been tough in the past few years because, you know, the other sports were more popular and we had to compete with them. And our main problem right now is that we don't have as many fields. We just have a couple of fields in Lima, and in the provinces we're trying to adapt soccer fields for baseball. But you know, in the beginning we didn't have as much that problem because we had more fields. I guess there were more than 3-4 probably, but right now we just have two, and one of them is dedicated for baseball. The other one we cannot use right now because of the, you know, the problems we're facing with the pandemic around the world. Sure. And Peru is hitting us really hard.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. You know, the first of all, that dreaded soccer, man, they you know, it's all over the world, and I kid because I play soccer, but it is it's a competitive sport, and every country is competing against soccer, and it's tough. And that's some of the reasons, you know, we talk about, and we'll get into it, we'll talk about, you know, you got to make baseball fun, because otherwise, you know, kids are going to find, you know, they're going to go to soccer where they're running all the time. We talked about that many times on the show. Mm-hmm. Before we get into all this, Ernest, you know, tell me your background a little bit when it came as a player. You started playing baseball in Venezuela, and then how did it evolve that you got to Peru?
I started playing ball when I was 7, all the way till I was 17. But it was interesting because when I got to 15, 16, that's when I understood that there was, you know, professional baseball and all that. So, you know, I tried out for a couple of teams. I had some tools, didn't have all of them at the time. I developed a little late, but when I was around 19, 20, I made a tryout back in Caracas. So I was selected as one of the 6 players that were selected during the tryout. And I ended up going to Iowa Falls, Iowa. You know, go figure. I went all the way up north and played junior college there for 2 years. And I had good numbers my second year. So I was recruited by Elliot Johnson to go to Olivet.
Yep.
And I graduated there. So awesome. After that, I coached a little bit in Chicago Hope Academy. I was the head coach there for a year and a half. After that, you know, my wife and I, we decided to go back to Venezuela because, you know, we wanted to be part of the change, you know, be part of the new group of professionals who could help the country. Hmm. We ended up going back in 2011 and, you know, nothing changed. So we were looking for other options, and Peru was the option that that we decided to take. But it was interesting because I spent a year here without knowing that there was baseball until you came, basically. You know, when you came, actually a little before that you came, I was working as an interpreter, you know, for this group of missionary baseball coaches that came down here. It was around January 2018. So I started, you know, interpreting for them. And that's when I found out that there was baseball. And at that point, I met Paul Gonzalez. So the rest is history.
All right. Now, coming from Venezuela, this will be interesting because, first of all, you end up in Iowa, which is very cold. So I'm sure you had the hats and the gloves and the parkas and all that. But now, you know, you're back in Venezuela. Now you go to Peru. Now, you know, Venezuela, one of the best baseball countries in the world at the top. I mean, unbelievable major league players, minor league players, collegiate players, on and on. What was it like when you got to Peru? You know, you saw baseball and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is a big difference from Venezuela, right?
First of all, when I found out that there was baseball, it was exciting. You know, I was like, wow, this is the best thing ever. But I understood very rapidly how it worked because it's the same thing for us. I mean, what the Peruvians feel for soccer is the same thing that we feel for baseball. You know, Your parents or our parents ask us or push us to play baseball since we were 3, 4, 5, you know, and we developed a lot. And it's the same thing here. I've seen kids playing soccer down here who are 5, 6, and they do things with the ball that I could never do in my whole life. They're amazing, right? But why? Because they see it everywhere. So it was the same thing for us. We used to play on the streets. We used to play on the little courts back in school, everywhere. You know, so baseball was everything for us as the way it is here for young players or for young people here in Peru.
You know, and that's what I love about Latin America, because I get it. Funding is tough in a lot of countries. Trying to get players to play, I know it's not easy. But, you know, when we talk about, Paul, you mentioned the fields, and it's tough to find fields, but you make adjustments, right? You get a football, you get a soccer field. Kids are going to learn how to adapt to that. And sometimes, you know, under these tough conditions, become better players. I mean, Venezuela doesn't have great fields everywhere you go for the young kids. The Dominican Republic doesn't have great fields. They got a lot of fields, obviously. But also, you know, Cuba, I mean, sometimes, you know, you're going to be in that atmosphere where it's a little tough. And I think it makes better players. Paul, I want to jump to with the Federation because, you know, it's tough enough to get kids to play a game of baseball anywhere in the world. Even in the U.S., sometimes it's tough because they see other sports. They got other things they want to do. But then you've also got, it's a sport that costs a little bit of money. Now, you're going to explain it because, you know, the sport in Peru is kind of funded by the government and other programs, but it's so hard that now all of a sudden the pandemic hits. Now it shuts things down. So talk about the effects it's had, kind of where you get your funding and then what the effects it's had, the pandemic, not just on the kids that can't get out and play baseball, but also on the funding to keep the game going.
So first, let me explain a little bit how the Institute of Sports works with the federations. Basically, the funding from the government goes to teams that are 15U up. They don't fund any minors programs. So what happens with baseball is that coaches are basically the people that fund the sport for the kids. And because if there are, for example, parents that want their kids to do any sport, they choose soccer and they pay for soccer, but they don't pay for other sports. So for some reason they discriminate us. So if you want my kid to play baseball, okay, you put everything that kid needs, you know, the equipment, you have to. So it's the coaches. I had to go through that experience myself. If I wanted to do baseball, I had to invest my time, my money, and everything. And the kids that come to me, I have to basically pay for everything. So that's more or less the situation that happens with baseball and basically any other sport that is not soccer here. So it's us that for some for that reason have to sustain the sport for the kids. Now, when the kids grow up and they get to 15 years old or 16 years old, then we can access to the funding of the government. And then the national teams are basically the ones that are run by the federation with the funding of the government. So we have basically teams of 18U and 21U and then the adult team. Those are our three basic teams that we sustain with the help of the government.
Those are national.
And national. If that answers my question.
No, that's good. No, national teams, Paul. And you know, a shout out to the government. Folks, do some research and some history. You know, you got to fund the younger kids. Yeah, if you don't fund the younger kids, the program is not going to grow. Pretty soon, you're not going to have 15, 16-year-old players, so you're not going to have anybody to fund there. You got to fund it at the younger levels. Help them out, man, as much as you can. Paul, I mean, the pandemic, Ernest, let me jump to you here. The pandemic, the same has affected the players on the field. Now, the national team's training, because they've got to get ready for competition. I'm sure there's special protocols. But, man, it's really affected the players a lot here. How have the coaches and the players adapted to this? What are they doing? Because you can't go on the field. Are they trying to do anything else?
Well, let me add something to Paul's comments very quick. You know, what the situation with the parents is interesting because the parents don't see a future in baseball, you know, but they see it in soccer because right. There are so many teams locally, you know, professional soccer, and also they see it elsewhere. So for the parents, they'd rather invest that money on children playing soccer than baseball because they don't see anything here. But I'm very sure that if we are able in the near future to start a professional or semi-professional baseball league here, I'm sure more kids will come because the parents will be like, okay, yeah, you know, he can go there and he can start doing something positive. So now, when it comes to the pandemic, it has been tough, you know. We were able to return to the field around, I think it was August last year. So, you know, it wasn't bad. We got most of our players back. But before that, we were able to work on our main weakness, which was conditioning, you know, like our bodies. Our kids they never had that, what is it called? They never had that tradition, you know, of working out, lifting weights. And the pandemic, you know, among all the terrible things that happened, it was an opportunity for us, you know, because we were able to attack the weakness. And we designed a program for our players to work out. And it was 4 days a week. And when they came back to the field, they saw the results. You know, they were like, oh my God, this works, you know. The ball was, you know, flying farther. They were throwing a little harder. So since that point, we haven't stopped. We have been working out through Zoom, like we are right now. And then we have taken advantage of the time in the field and also through Zoom.
Ernest, what are the coaches curious? What are they doing on Zoom? What are they talking to the kids, showing them videos? You know, kids, you know, just like class. I mean, if you just talk to them for an hour, that's not going to, you know, filter through. They're going to be thinking of other things. You got to keep them entertained a little bit, or at least we're, you know, talking together, getting them involved. So what have you guys been doing? Some of the coaches, what are the examples?
It's interesting. Like in my case, I'm the infield coach. So I have had to become very creative, you know, trying to learn how to use one wall that the kid has available in the house, using different kind of balls, plastics, rubber, anything, you know, work on drills that will make sense, but also that they can apply whenever they get back to the field, you know, and that's what they did. We were working on, you know, transfers, we were working on athletic fielding positions and all that. But like I said, we were spending basically half of the time on, you know, working on push-ups, burpees, squats, anything. Most of them had dumbbells available. So we were using them too. So we had to become, you know, creative. And also, just because when we work out here, the time is very limited, we were taking advantage of the time and talking, you know, about a little bit of psychology, encouraging them, and talking about baseball in general.
Yeah, I love it, love it. Hey, you know, one of the, you know, toughest things, I know one thing we did, and just to add to our folks, you know, I was with Ernest in Peru. Let me tell you, this guy knows baseball, and they're very lucky to have you there in, you know, with Peru baseball. One of the things we were doing is, you know, in Latin America, kids seem to have a little bit more of an instinct, which is great, because sometimes they play out on their own, you know, like they do in Venezuela and Cuba and Dominican and all that. And sometimes kids don't have instincts. So we, you know, we try to put on a video, like a major league game, and we'll play the video, and maybe there's a base running thing, and then, you know, we'll stop it and say, okay, what would you have done in that situation? Let the players answer that. So folks out there, there's a lot of things. Ernest said it perfectly. Be creative, and you can help your players in so many ways. But don't forget, don't talk much. Let them do the talking. Ask them the questions. Hey, Paul, the Federation, you know, the governing body of the sport, big responsibility. You got to develop the sport, help grow the sport. The toughest thing we just talked about, growing the sport's hard. I was with you, you know, so I was able to experience some great things. But I want you to tell the folks, what do you guys do to try to get young kids to play the game? You got to attract them, right? And then you got to keep them. So not only do you got to get them, but you got to keep them in the game. So what do you do in Peru to try to get kids to play the game?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing we have to do is to engage people in our project. So what we're trying to do right now is trying to see and take advantage of the fact that there are many immigrants right now from Venezuela, for example. Mm. And many of them know about the sport. So what we're trying to do is have them participate in our courses that we are running. And Ernest knows about the courses that we are we're having with them. Ernest is teaching, I think it's hitting and infield. And well, these people that are being formed by the Federation are going to be part of our promotions and promoting this sport in different parts of the city. Because we want them to go to schools, to go to parks, to go to basically schools where we want them to teach the kids baseball. And that's our plan. The other thing we want to attack is the fact that we don't have as many fields. So we're working with the local governments, trying to persuade them that baseball is a good option to have the kids participate in a sport that will give them discipline, will give them the abilities that they might not have at the moment. And there are kids that don't want to play soccer and they want to have another choice. Well, that's what we want to capture the attention of those people, involve the parents as well, persuade them that baseball is good for their kids. And when we get to the point of when the parents are involved and they get to know the sport, they start liking it, they're loving it, and they participate and they want to, sometimes they want to be umpires, they want to even to coach. So it's a great experience. So we're trying to work on that. But basically now that we're in the middle of the pandemic, we're having courses, getting people involved. And these people are going to be the promoters of the sport, and they're going to go to different their places or districts. We have also coaches from different parts of Peru also that are interested and want to start promoting the sport in their regions, in their districts, and in their neighborhoods. So we expect that when the pandemic is over, then these people are going to be the number one promoters of the sport around the country.
You know, that's what's great about being able to be on a program like this Zoom, where, you know, you can be with all your different coaches around the country and it doesn't cost much to do that and train them, like you said, in order to go out later and start promoting the game. There's a key here, and both of you guys could answer this, Ernest. First of all, tell me how old are the kids that you're going after? Where do you start? What age? But also, once you're there, what do you do to attract them? They seem to like it, right? But if you show them a regular baseball game, I got a feeling they're just going to look at it and say, well, you know, I'm standing around doing nothing for a while. Why would I want to play this game, right? So we got to be, to Ernest's words earlier, we got to be creative and attracting these kids somehow. So what's the age, and what can we do to be a little bit more creative?
Well, I'm going to start. It is interesting because I haven't been involved very much with the little ones, because as Paul said, we basically work with you know, 15, 18, and older, right? But something that really... Say what?
You took the easy route, the older guys.
Okay, I don't know. Let's agree to disagree. Anyway, it is interesting because something that really helped us was the Pan American Games. You know, those games were televised, and also it was amazing the amount of people that went, you know, to the stadium. Most of the people there did not know about the game, but at the end they felt, you know, the emotions, and they were, you know, getting involved in the whole thing. So that was something that really helped us. And I was there to see it, because right after the games, we had a bunch of kids, you know, signing up for baseball lessons, you know, at the same field where the Pan American Games were played. Wow. So that was fantastic. They didn't know much, but at least they wanted to try.
Mm-hmm. Paul, you want to add anything as far as any way to attract players, anything interesting you're doing? And I realize that the other issue you have is you got to have equipment. So sometimes you have to show these kids baseball with the baseballs you have or with the bats you have. You don't have many choices there. Maybe you can choke up on the bat, do something different. But it seems like you said, as soon as they kind of see it and hitting a baseball, I bet they like that a lot.
Yes, well, I can tell you from my personal experience. Huh? The first time I hit a ball, and it was in a park, actually. One of my neighbors was actually playing on a team. And he came with a bat and a baseball and said, okay, let's play baseball. Okay, what is this sport? I've never seen it. So we started playing it. And it was from that moment on, I just felt the emotion, felt the excitement. And I'm pretty sure that that's what the kids I teach and I coach feel at the beginning. And that's why they get in love, fall in love with the game. And that's what we're trying to share with the kids, with basically with these classes we're having through Zoom. We are telling our coaches that what they have to do is transmit that feeling, that passion for the game to the kids. And I think that's the most important thing that a coach has to, the best quality that the coach has is transmit the passion for the game. And that's how the kids get involved, and they really see that we love the game, and that's contagious for them.
I can't agree with you so much. I mean, it's, you know, you don't want, and I'm going to have you answer that too, Ernest. You know, the reason I like what you said is because, you know, nobody wants to go to a baseball practice or a game with somebody that's boring. You know, I mean, you want excitement, you want enthusiasm, especially young kids. I mean, you get to the higher levels, you can do whatever you want there in some ways. Ernest, go ahead, answer also on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we have been very clear, but what we have done is the following. We have been training other coaches, right? And those coaches have been delivering baseball lessons through Zoom, you know, for the last 3 or 4 months.
Nice.
You know, so that has been great, because in the beginning, we thought that, you know, they might come some days and they might disappear, you know, the children, but they haven't, you know, what is it called? The attendance, you know, the attendance has been, you know, very stable. And those coaches that we're helping, you know, are the ones delivering the classes and the lessons.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, if you're a coach and you're doing something like this, it's going to make you better, because you got to think how you're going to do things. You're thinking all the things you're trying to teach, and you're becoming better yourself because you come up with some good ideas. Ernest, the other area, you know, you're talking about now, Venezuela, some Cuban players, Japanese influence, and obviously Peruvian. When you mix all that together, and you've got all kinds of players, there's got to be a great benefit to that for the Peruvian players, because you're getting the Japanese influence in some ways, you know, the discipline, hopefully. You're getting the Latin America style and, you know, passion for the game. How's that been here?
Hey, let me tell you, since I've been here, when I started, they were not, you know, the it was not that mixed as it is right now. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we, the staff, you know, was created, they started coming, you know, a bunch of the guys from the Japanese community, they started to report. And then the Venezuelan, Peruvian started to report to the team too. And like I told you before the show, that's how we were able to get second place at the second Caribbean Cup. You know, mm-hmm. we fought in the final against the Dominican team. We lost, but we beat the American Virgin Islands. You know, it was a very exciting game. So yeah. The level is growing. You know, there is no doubt about it. The level is growing. And the guys are seeing the results, because that's something that we were lacking, you know, results. Because in the past, they used to play against our neighbors, Bolivia, you know, Chile, Ecuador. So the competition wasn't good enough. But now that they're going up to the Caribbean and they're playing against, you know, the best teams up there, now they feel like they can do it. You know, that was something that we have to be very grateful with the Federation, that they change the mindset. You know, we stopped playing the same competition that they used to do, and now it is real baseball. You know, it's something that these guys are training for something. You know, they know they have to compete against people with the same or higher level than them, and that has been very useful.
Yeah, and I love the mindset part, because, you know, a lot of times you do have to change the mindset. When all of a sudden you've got the national team, you've got the Pan Am Games that you know, it's on TV, you've got, you know, where you're going to the Caribbean Cup in the future, maybe even a professional league. Wow, that really gives young kids an opportunity to look at all these goals that they can have playing the sport. Hey, Paul, speaking about the sport, what are we talking about numbers wise when you talk about all baseball players? And I'm assuming there's softball too. So baseball players, how many baseball players in the whole country? Let's give our audience a little idea.
Okay, I can tell you how many players are registered at the Federation. We are right. 1,100, which is a high number for baseball, considering that soccer is the main sport, and volleyball this is an interesting thing, that soccer, normally in Peru we say, okay, soccer for boys and volleyball for girls.
Yeah.
But that's us. Yeah, but that's not what happens in the United States, of course. Different thing, different story. But we have 1,100 registered players, and probably many more that are not registered yet. But it's a large number, considering that we have just two fields that are official fields for baseball. So one of our aims is to at least get one more official in baseball field. At least before the end of our term, which is in 3 more years. That's what we want to do. And when talking about the Caribbean Cup, we're really excited that we are participating this year. And Ernest, of course, is involved in the process, along with Kenny Rodriguez, which is the head coach. And we have other coaches also. I would like to mention and thank Luis Watts, Francisco Peroso, Juan Carlos Peroso, and Juan Fernandez. Those are our staff, and Ricardo Miranda, of course, who is the one that leads the whole team of coaches. And we're really excited. We have all the limitations of the pandemic. So we've had a lot of problems. Now the funding we have for this year has decreased because of, as you mentioned, financially we have been hit as a country, and the funding the Institute of Sports gets from, for example, casinos and other businesses that have been shut down, that has hurt the whole sports system in Peru. But we have been able to get the funding for this cup, and we are really, you know, excited that we can go this year. And we hope to do our best to repeat the results we had last year, if we cannot improve them and be the winners this time, this time around.
How do you, How do you handle that when the funding gets cut, when now you got less funding, Paul, and what we have to take from, you know, Peter and pay Paul, or put it in this part of the program? How do you do that? Because already you don't have a lot of funding.
Well, we have to thank also the president of the Federation. I forgot to mention Javier Ramos.
Yeah, you're fired.
He's a magician, actually. He knows how to handle the money. He's a genius behind what we do with the money. We've done miracles. I can assure you.
You got to run it like a business, right? I mean, if you got a businessman that understands it, it's a lot better. And I've seen that a lot in other countries when you have a good business person involved. Well, along with baseball people, you can figure ways out, right, to do things, Paul.
Yes, certainly. So we have limitations, but actually I told Javier and said, oh, how are we going to handle this year with so little money for 2021? That don't worry, we're going to pull out this trip to Curaçao, and we're gonna do it. And he did it. Wow. And we're really thankful that that all the people involved, him and Pedro Pachos, who is our secretary, is really involved in this project as well. And we are really excited, and we're gonna pull out a great year, 2021. We're pretty sure.
That's the way to think. Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, Paul mentioned Ricardo Miranda from Cuba. When I was there, we did a show with Ricardo. So if you want to go back in past episodes and listen to that, you can also email me at caliendo19@gmail.com if you got any questions. Hey, Ernest, now we're talking about what are the challenges? Because, I mean, folks, 1,100 players in their country playing baseball. And yet they've got to compete against, in the Caribbean Cup, against some really tough teams. Pan Am Games, obviously, extremely tough. We're talking about North, Central, South America, and the Caribbean. There's a lot of great countries there. When you got 1,100 players, that can't be that easy. Ernest, what's been the challenge competing against some of these higher level clubs? And what have you done to kind of, you know, balance that a little bit?
The biggest challenge has been when we receive them, we don't really act as a national team. We act as an academy. You know, it sounds crazy, but that's the way it is. You know, the kids that we take, we are the one in charge of making them better, you know, correcting, helping them with, you know, the proper instruction and all that. And that has been, you know, an issue. Because for example, we participated during the World Cup qualifier for 23 and under. You know, that was in Nicaragua last year. And I remember the Venezuelan team, they organized the whole team in 2 weeks. You know, they just send an email saying, hey, if you're interested, report this day, blah, blah, blah. They got 150 players, you know, to choose 25. In our case, we had to, you know, bring one of the Peruvian guys in Canada. We had to bring one, you know, who was in Mexico, and we have to, you know, kind of make magic to complete 24 players, you know. So, yeah, it's a different reality. But like I said before, yes.
No, and since you're on that, because then we'll continue, because this will bring up a good point. Go ahead and talk about, you know, American Peruvians that live here in the U.S., because that could help grow the game if they're looking to play in Peru. Explain how all that works.
Well, that has been one of the emphases that Paul and I have had, you know, since we started working together, because I know that there are a lot of Peruvian Americans baseball players. For example, there is one kid, his name is Carlos Lequerica. He plays for Miami Dade. You know, he's a starting pitcher. He's really good. He might get drafted, you know, very soon. So that's what we're looking for. You know, those kids who have the Peruvian blood, and they can help us out. You know, that would be a great addition to have kids like him. So that's what, you know, like I'm saying, if we cannot get them here yet, you know, we will have to bring them from elsewhere, you know.
Yeah, and there's a little, Paul and Ernest, both of you guys, there's a little challenge when you start to do this, because you've got some Cuban players, possibly some Venezuelans, like you said. And the challenge is this: as you grow big. You always want, hopefully, some international influence, like you're saying, Americans are Peruvians. But at the same time, you also want your guys in Peru to make sure that they get a chance to play. Because I've seen where all of a sudden all these foreign guys come in and there's no rules. And now the Peruvians are going, you know, well, why should I play? I mean, there's no chance here. Everybody else play. So that's a little bit of a challenge, right?
Yeah, but what we're looking for is to create competition. Because the Peruvian native, as soon as they see competition, they will work harder. Because they want to put on the jersey that says Peru, you know? But if there are not enough players, they'll be like, you know, I'll make it anyway. There's nobody else, you know? And that's what we don't want. We want them to compete for their position. That would be the best thing for the whole team, you know?
And that's a great point. And I want to talk about also, now you're facing some of these clubs and, you know, these national teams and other countries. You got to have some kind of strategy here because, again, pitching-wise, all kinds of different things in the game. What do you try to do to try to equalize the competition? Because, you know, your guys may not have seen some of the fastballs thrown by, you know, other countries or a breaking ball. So what are some of the things that you might do to kind of help your ball club out?
But one thing
you mean like to prepare? One thing that
we thought from the beginning of our administration was that we needed assistance from people who were experts in the game. And first one I contacted was you, Pete.
And that was
you came over because we needed people who knew how we could face those big teams. So we had you 2 years, then we also had Barry Husband.
Yep.
We also had Pete Wilkinson, who helped us a lot before the Pan American Games. So first thing we wanted to learn was about the game and have knowledge. And with knowledge, we can do a lot of things. Compensate for the deficiencies we might have technically or physically. Well, knowledge was first thing for us. So that was our first big thing we wanted to do. And Ernest, you can continue with Ernest, the other.
Go throw on that. You know, the things that Paul's talking about, what are some of those things you guys did in training to get ready for some of these clubs?
Good. In the case of pitching, for example, Barry Husband really helped us a lot, you know, because he came in with the theory of the tunnel, you know, and for our guys, it was mind blowing. Why? Because they understood that they didn't have to throw that hard a certain point, you know, in order to fool the hitters, right? And he helped. I actually remember that we played Puerto Rico during the Pan American Games, and that was the best game of the whole tournament. We lost 4-1, but Puerto Rico was the undefeated champ of the whole thing, you know? Yeah. And we kept them very close. And it was basically using this theory of the tunnel, you know, throwing one ball, you know, that sinks, something that slides, you know, going a little slower, going up, and it worked, you know?
And it's interesting because when you talk about that, you know, everybody wants to throw harder and I get it. Okay. But it takes time and you got to work at it, but all, you know, sometimes you could also throw slower and the differences and what Perry Husband shows is a big deal. And I think that's huge. Paul, the other thing is your first mistake was bringing me over to Peru. That was your first mistake. Okay. I made one mistake, but then made up with Perry Husband and Wilkinson. Both great friends and unbelievable. And this is what I love about, you know, sharing the show and sharing baseball worldwide, because there's a lot, you know, not that you want other countries. I know you don't want other countries in Latin America getting better, but, you know, the more they have technology and understanding of all this, the whole game grows better in a lot of ways.
And there's one thing I would like to add, Pete, because one of the things that our administration has done is open up Peruvian baseball to relationships with many people around the in Latin America and around the world. And we started with you, and you contacted us with more people. And also Javier is very good at public relations, and he went to different meetings. He even went to Africa once. And so I went to Japan also, and I made some good friends there. You were there as well. So And that is very important. Relationships are very important if we want to make baseball grow, Peruvian baseball. And now, when probably before, the name Peru didn't sound as much in baseball circles. But now, we mentioned Peru is mentioned in different meetings and among different people who are involved in baseball. And we're really proud that that's happening right now.
You know, great point. And the other point also I wanted to bring up and talk to you guys about, one of the reasons I came over was because we wanted to begin, and I know you guys have done it, but it was a good start also. In addition, started training coaches because, you know, the coaches are the foundation of the sport. If you got very good coaches, especially at the younger levels, and you need them at both, you know, it's a top down, up and bottom up system. You got to have two strong areas, right? So adding on to that, what have you guys done to continue that coach's education? I know you talked about on Zoom, you continued education, or maybe some goals that you have in the future, because that coach's programs are going to be critical, not only to grow the game, but also to make players better.
Well, we can also mention that we had some Cuban friends of yours as well.
Oh, yes, my man Barroso. Yes, he came over.
Uh-huh. And we've also been to Cuba as well.
Yes. So
we are continuing with that formation of coaches and kids as well. But the pandemic has limited us in a way, but we have continued with this program where we teach coaches and form coaches. So these coaches, I'm pretty sure, are going to be unbelievable when we go back to normal. Because if they can do great things through Zoom, they can do much better on the field.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted to add that, you know, you said it right. You know, the coaches are the main, you know, developers of the whole thing. And in my case, you know, I have people in the States that I run to as soon as I have a question. It's something that I have learned through the ABCA. You know, you have to find out. You have to talk to coaches. You have to ask questions because we don't know it all. You know, it's something that is very clear. And in my case, I have a former coach, Rich Benjamin. He's Indiana Wesleyan. Yeah. If I have a question, I just call him. You know, hey, coach, what are you doing in this situation? Well, how can I do this or that? I have two of my best friends, Moises Rodriguez. He is in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. He works for Hartfield Academy. He's the players development guy there. So, you know, I call him every time I can. Hernan Ramos in Ellsworth Community College. You know, and he's the one keeping me updated with technology because I don't know much about technology, you know, but it is about learning and passing, you know, that information to the other coaches here, because we don't have access here to more courses or stuff that is locally developed. We are the one that have to go out, find the information and share with the other coaches, you know.
And the reason I brought that up, Ernest, is because, you know, in the future, as you collect all this information, and we talked about it, Paul, also when I was there, in the future, it'll, you know, you want to put your program together that continues to educate coaches. And I think you guys will be in a really, I mean, you guys have done an incredible job so far. Ernest, I want to ask you also again about the training part, because what are some of the challenges, some of the things you guys are trying to improve? You've improved the pitching, obviously, with Perry Husband. What else are you trying to make better? Because obviously you're looking at this and saying, we need to get better in this area. We need to get better in this area. What are some of the things you need to get better at, and what are you doing to get better?
Like I said before, our main weakness is our size, you know, our bodies. Right. So that's what we put in the emphasis right now. Because offensively, it has really hurt us, you know. It's not the same when you face a guy throwing 80-82, and then when you go and play internationally, you're facing everyone throwing from 88 to 92. You know, yeah. If you're not strong enough, you're not able to move the bat, you know. And that's one of the things that we're doing the most, working on our player's body. Because as you saw when you came here, you know, it's not a big team, you know, meaning physically. Those guys are not big naturally. So we have to, you know, develop it. And that's what we're doing. That's basically the main thing. And like I said, after the pandemic, they understood, because they were throwing harder. They were hitting the ball farther. And they were like, okay, this, you know, this working out, it really pays off. All
right, I got to ask you this, Ernest, and from the coaching standpoint, we talk about this all the time in a show, and I love to get different perspectives. You know, it's a game, and Paul, you know this, you played, so now working with the young kids, you know, because you and I went to a school, you know, that you did some work in, I remember. It is a game where, unfortunately, I know people don't want to use the word failure, but unfortunately, you do fail more times at baseball than you do other sports. You know, we all know that. So, Ernest, first start with you. What the challenge there, because, you know, all of a sudden the guy's, you know, 0 for 3, then the next guy's 0 for 4, and all of a sudden he's 0 for 9, and then it starts to get mental. What are the challenges there, and how do you deal with that?
It is interesting because we have a very young team. So they, in themselves, they see the progress, because what we're looking for right now is progress. We're not asking them, you know, to hit bombs or anything like that. We're looking for progress, and they see it themselves. You know, they miss a ball and they say, wow, I got a little under, you know, I got on top of that one. I let myself get beat, you know, but they're thinking about it. It's not as you see it in the Caribbean, that when you miss, or when you fail, and that's it. No, here we see it as a progress, and the kids are understanding the process. You know, they're like, okay, I didn't get a base hit, but I did this right, I did that right, you know, and that's the way we're trying to approach it with them.
Love it. And hey, folks, I'm looking at Facebook, and I can't mention everybody, a lot of people, appreciate it. But I do want to mention Bill Angelo, head coach at Elgin Community College here, one of the best junior college programs in the country. And Bill, I mentioned that because, Ernest there went to Olivet Nazarene, played for Hall of Fame coach Elliot Johnson. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Bill's, you know, here's a guy, Bill's been in the game so long, he jumps on Facebook just to maybe listen for a few minutes, and you could always pick something up. Paul, what about the young kids? I mean, you know, you played, you know that it's a game sometimes, you know, it's tough. They're going to miss the ball and all that. What, any advice there?
Well, what's interesting is that I've had kids that have lost games consecutively, but I've seen them coming back and when they make it, they really feel really, really proud of what they've done. So the key is persistence and encouraging them and not telling them what they did wrong, but what they did good. So that's what I think the attitude of the coach is really what makes the kids come back and have that feeling that they can succeed once they do things properly and they feel proud of what they achieve. Now, what's been happening, and this Ernest knows, that as a national team, we have been used to losing games and consecutively, and then we started winning and said, wow, we won. And it has been a surprise for them in the beginning, but then they're now getting used to winning. And that's something positive that has been happening lately. And we have to just keep motivating them. And I think the team is pretty motivated right now. And we really believe that we're going to achieve really big things in the years to come. We just have to continue working hard. And I want to say that we are really proud of our coaching staff. We started with a group of people. We weren't that sure where we would arrive at. But now we feel that this group of people have grown with us in the past 4 years, and they have grown a lot. They have, we're really proud of what they have achieved and what they know right now. And we feel confident that we have great coaches that are leading this process. And I think we're going to, in the 4 years we have started this administration, this second term, and by the end, it's going to be, I know, a fantastic outcome that we're going to achieve.
You know, and you should be proud of it. And I'll tell you why, because, I mean, you know, 4 years ago when I was there, I mean, it's amazing the jump you guys have made, not only in the games you're playing, the competition, the winning, you know, getting, and Ernest, you mentioned earlier, changing the culture, So you guys have done fantastic job of this. It's been incredible. I'm proud of you guys because just knowing you, because, you know, again, folks, if you just joined us, we're talking about Peruvian baseball, 1,100 players in the game, but yet they're playing in the Pan Am Games, the Caribbean Cup. They've developed good players. They're winning. You heard Paul, what he talked about. Arias, go ahead and add anything you want to that.
Well, I was going to say that one of the things that probably the audience don't know is that our players, they don't get, they don't get paid. They don't get help, like financially from anybody. They come to practice with their own money. You know, they put the effort. Most of them have to work, go to school. So time is very limited for those guys. And that's why they are the one that deserve all the credit, you know, because we're just there waiting for them. When they show up, we do what we have to do. But most of the time, we forget that they're doing an extraordinary effort, to show up to practice. Because, as many people might know, for example, the traffic in Lima is considered among the five worst in the world. It's tough. But these guys spend an hour and a half to get from their workplace to get to the field, and practice from 8 to 10 p.m. or from 7 to 9. And then, they got to go home and it takes an hour and a half or 2 hours again. So what they do is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And we have to highlight that because they are the one putting the effort.
Yeah, the passion and love for the game. I think that's what develops character. And really, that's why you guys were able to build this culture and create what you created there. There's nothing more than better things to come. I can see that. Hey, guys, let's finish it off with this. I don't want to miss anything about Peruvian baseball that you wanted to mention. Anything you want our audience to know, and our audience is in the U.S., but also all over the world. We've got over 100 countries who listen to the show. Folks, the podcast, Baseball Outside the Box, the audio, and then don't forget YouTube, Peter Caliendo, and also Facebook, Peter Caliendo. Subscribe, get updates on different shows that we have. Paul, go ahead. I'll start with you.
Yes, maybe one thing that would be interesting, and maybe they don't know in the U.S., for example, is that Peru has the weather for baseball is great here down here, because you can play baseball all year round, and maybe during the off season, I don't know if there'd be people interested in coming down to Peru to play, or maybe there's a company or that would be interested to start something here with baseball. They just have to contact us. We would be more than happy to have them talk to us and maybe start a project here, maybe an academy. We would be really, really happy to have them here and start something interesting with kids. They have to remember also that lots of Venezuelan kids with lots of talents are here. And maybe if they want to, start or even build a field here for coaching, for scouting, they just have to contact us. And
we'll put, folks, for you, we'll put all the emails on the show notes on how to contact Paul and Ernest. And the other thing I wanted to mention, that is a great point about, when you have a situation where you can play all year round, right? That's a benefit, no doubt about it. Now, do you take advantage of it? Is the season, and I should have mentioned, I asked you that earlier, is the season all year round for the players there?
Well, normally we start, we divided the year in parts. Normally, we have the pandemic right now, but usually what we have is start a tournament for kids in the summer here in Peru, January, February, March. And then the adults start their games in April, May, and we finish everything in December. So it's basically all year round we have a baseball activity.
Love it. Ernest, finish it off for us with some something we didn't know about Peruvian baseball. Obviously, the country's beautiful, but talk about anything you like.
Well, the thing that I would like to highlight too is that there are a lot of Venezuelan guys, like baseball players living in Lima, that has helped us a lot too, because they organized themselves and they made two teams to play against the national team. You know, that's it, that's what they do to contribute to the Peruvian baseball, you know. And it has been amazing because during the day, you will see these guys driving delivery or working as a taxi driver or whatever. But when they go and play against us, they're throwing 88, they're throwing 90, you know, they're hitting the ball out of the park. So it gives us that sense of good baseball, you know, on regular basis, you know. And I would really like to recognize that because they has helped us a lot. You know, we were not used to see that kind of competition here locally, and now we see it whenever we want, you know. So that's great to have them and the, you know, and the passion that they put for the game. You know, it's not like they're here going through the motions or no. They go hard, you know, and they celebrate and they have a great time. And that really has helped us a lot.
Absolutely. Love it, guys. Hey, listen, this has been fantastic. I'm glad we got to share about Peruvian baseball. Let me start with you, Ernest. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You know, I know you're doing a great job there. Just keep it up. And we're always here to help any way we can.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And you know, let's keep the relationship going and the networking. And I forgot to mention Pete Wilkinson. You know, he has been great to us, always in touch, always asking questions, you know, and helping. So you were the one, you know, putting us in contact, and we appreciate that a lot. Thanks.
Thank you. We're glad we could help. Paul, same thing, man. You've been a great friend. It was great to see you in Japan. You treated us, first class when we came into Peru and did a couple coaching clinics. I mean, I enjoyed it tremendously. Just being around guys and gals there, a lot of fun. That was fun in itself, you know, but I really appreciate being on a show, man. This is great.
Yeah, thank you very much, Pete, for having us. And we have to talk about your next coming to Peru. So your next visit should be soon when the pandemic is over.
They've been packed for a year. I haven't even taken the clothes out. They're still there. So I'm ready, man.
Looking forward to seeing you, Pete.
All right, folks, that is it for the show. Listen, that's Ernest Arias, the national team coach for the Peruvian team, and Paul Gonzalez, vice president of Peruvian baseball. You heard the show. I took a lot of notes. Fantastic. Special thanks to both of them. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Line of Media Group. And always the special thanks to all our guests in the U.S. and around the world on Facebook, YouTube, all the media outlets out there. We really appreciate it. Can't thank you enough. Listen, folks, stay safe, stay healthy. God bless you, and we'll see you on the field.